Last week we were talking about how a can of worms got opened up, and I'm going to go make them ooey gooey today, I guess. So I said, well, we'll go fishing this week. So today is the day we go fishing. So we're actually going to deal with, they're in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. And what we're dealing with, we have been going through and kind of looking at the new, when the New Testament quotes the Old Testament. And so we got a lot of things when the New Testament was quoting events that were prophesied in the Old Testament. So a lot of things like that, which was the black writing in the Gospels. Now we're going through times when Jesus personally quotes the Old Testament. And so we started out with Matthew 5, and we were going through some of those things where he quotes, "You shall not commit murder, you shall not commit adultery. Whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. You shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord." So on and so forth. We were going through some of those, and we kind of have, what we've looked at is Jesus and his usage of all that is taking that Old Testament law, laying out what it said, and then says, but here's what God's really looking for. And he drives it inward to the character of the person. He drives it inward to what's going on inside as opposed to just outwardly what you're doing. You know, so when he deals with you shall not commit murder, Jesus goes, you're not even really, you don't need to be angry with the anger of the world, with man's anger. And so he drives it inward. You stop the anger, you stop the murder. With you shall not commit adultery, he drives it inward again to you shall not lust, because if you stop the lust, you stop the adultery. And so Jesus is real. That's really what he's working on, is God's main concern is not so much outwardly, although he is concerned about that, but mainly he is concerned about what's going on the inside. So that later on in chapter 23, he's going to be able to talk to the Pharisees and say, hey, you should be cleaning the inside of the cup, because if you clean the inside, then the outside becomes clean too. So where is your focus going to be? Okay, so that is Jesus' main thrust in all of this, is that law specifically can only deal with outward things. You know, laws can only be made as regards behavior. You know, that's why even in like communist nations, people have the freedom of religion. You're free to believe whatever you want to believe. You're just not free to practice whatever you want to practice. That's not really freedom of religion, because everybody's free to believe whatever they want to believe. You can't make laws about what's going on in somebody's head, at least at this point in time. Now, maybe eventually they'll figure out how to be able to figure out what's going on in people's head, and then they can make laws about that too. But at this point in time, you can only make laws about people's behavior. So the Old Testament law was only dealing with the outward behavior, wasn't dealing with what's going on the inside. Okay, now, with that in context, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus is saying that with the new covenant, you know, laws, even though you can set laws about what's going on the outside, and you can't set laws about what's going on the inside, those laws cannot empower a person to be able to keep them. So the real work has to be done on the inside. Tom.
You know, the real dangers of these laws, though, that are regulating outward behavior, is just like what you think eventually will come out, what you do will eventually change who you are on the inside as well. So there's a reverse application there, that if government can control people long enough on their outward behavior, eventually it will change the inner man as well, to a negative way.
Right, right. Okay, so Jesus is working inside out. Governments have to work outside in, but Jesus is working inside out, and which even can be more powerful. You know, the only ones who will be able to resist that outward pressure will be those who are transformed on the inside. So there's a much powerful force working within us to the outside than any government can put on the outside to work toward the inside. So, again, make sure that you're working on what's going on the inside. Now, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus has laid this out. Says, okay, we're really concerned about what's going on the inside. That's where the focus needs to be. That'll stop the other stuff. But in the course of that, in verse 31, he says, and it was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except for the cause of unchastity, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Well, the question came up last week as regards where he talks about the, except for the cause of unchastity, would that include the lust that he's referring to earlier? So I said, well, let me look at it. Let me see here. So I think we got to. I've decided we're just going to go. We're going to take it back from the very beginning, and we're going to actually start from where Rain started this morning, and with his math, and we'll go from there. So let's go all the way back to Genesis again. It's interesting to me. Sometimes how things come about. You know, I said last week, when I decided to tackle Matthew chapter 5 and kind of go through all that, my main focus was going to be inside out. Work on the inside. That's where Jesus is working at. And there were certain, I wasn't really going to focus on certain details and things like that. But, you know, questions came up. Things got started to be discussed, and so necessitated dealing with it. Well, along with that, actually prior to all that, after the Bible Bowl was over, we finished up the Bible Bowl, started working with the high schoolers again, and we were going to study. And so back, it must have been October or November, they had written out different things they might like to study and had handed those in to me anonymously. And I stuck them in a little bag. And amazingly enough, 6-8 months later, I still have those. They're not quite as neat and nice as they were at that point in time, but I still have them all. So our very first study back, they said, yeah, we want to go back to those things. So I said, okay. Reached in, randomly pulled one out. Courtship and dating. That's what they wanted to study. And I said, are you sure you still want to do this? But we did. So that's actually, on Wednesday nights, that's actually what we've been going over down there, which has also been very interesting. And some of the same questions, actually. So some of what you'll hear this morning will be some of what they've heard. A little bit different, directed more toward you. I handle things a little bit differently with them. I let them think through things a little bit more. I will tell you a little bit more. But that being the case, that's why I have Dating with Integrity. Would anyone? No. Resources are being funneled my way to help. But we'll see how it goes here. So a lot of what we're going to talk about is stuff that I've gone over with them some, but some of the same thoughts are going in their heads too. So Genesis chapter 2, God creates Adam, brings the animals. They look at him. He names them all. Not a helper suitable for him, so God makes him one from his rib. Verse 23, the man said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Okay, now, with the creation of Eve, God says, God says, you know, a man will leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, the two become one. You can get over to Ephesians chapter 5 and start figuring out that even at this early stage, God's already got his plan in motion for Christ and the church. You know, no sin has been committed, And already God's prophesying Christ in the church, as Rain was pointing out this morning. But you also have the man and the woman. Go over to Matthew chapter 19 then to see what Jesus had to say about that. Matthew 19, we're going to start from verse 3. It says, "And some Pharisees came to him, testing him and saying, 'Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause at all?' He answered and said, 'Have you not read?'" Which, side note here, I love when Jesus says that, because usually when he's talking, the people he's talking to are like Pharisees, scribes, the ones that really are supposed to know the Old Testament law. And he says, "Have you not read?" It's kind of like one of those little jabs at him. You know, "Oh, so you don't know this one? You who are the experts on the law?" He says, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Consequently, they are no longer two, but one flesh.'" There's Rain's math for today. "What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate." So you've got at the very beginning, God makes Adam and Eve, says, "For this cause a man will leave his father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." And then he goes on, Jesus, in his discussion of it, when they're asking about divorce, says, hey, he quotes that scripture. Man leaves his father and mother, cleaves his wife, the two become one flesh. And then he goes on and says, consequently, no longer are they two, but one flesh. What God has joined together, let no man separate. Which then Jesus lays out there that God's intention was the two become one, and that you don't try to come up with one half and one half. You know, we won't go into the math of that one there. I don't know if the two become one and then you separate them, are they still one or are they half and a half? It'd be half and half? Creamer? No. Okay. So, we're talking biblical math here. But the Jesus' point is, his intention is, you don't separate. That's not his intention. When God put the two together, he says, that's not what he intends, for there to be a separateness. Let no man separate that. Now, the fact is, even, you know, fairly soon after God set it up that way, you find it happening. You know, divorce was not, it's not something that has just hit American society. It's everywhere. And it's not only everywhere, it's for all time it's been there. Now, what did where did God go on it? Let me see. Is that where I want to go? Let's hit a side note. Let's hit a little tangent that I find interesting. Let's see if you do. Deuteronomy chapter 22. This is a preface to that. It's kind of a side note, but maybe worth touching on. I'm sure that Mike and Cody could answer the question that I would ask, but I won't ask him. And that is, what about those who would engage in premarital sex? What does God call them? What would be the scriptural term for them? Do you guys remember it? They do. Okay, good. Deuteronomy chapter 22. Let's start from verse 13. And this is just a side note, but it kind of gives you an idea of God's perspective on things. Keep in mind that culturally, the American culture is not anywhere close to the godly perspective. Now, what we'll have to do is, once we see God's perspective, then we can say, okay, now, what do we do in the midst of our current culture? Not that it changes God's perspective, but it might change our perceptions a little. Just wait till we get there. Don't read into that more than there. any man takes a wife, this is verse 13, and goes into her and then turns against her and charges her with shameful deeds and publicly defames her and says, I took this woman when I came near her, but I did not find her a virgin. Then the girl's father and her mother shall take and bring out the evidence of the girl's virginity to the elders of the city at the gate. And the girl's father shall say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man for a wife, but he turned against her, and behold, he has charged her with shameful deeds, saying, I did not find your daughter a virgin. But this is the evidence of my daughter's virginity. And they shall spread the garment before the elders of the city. So the elders of that city shall take the man and chastise him. And they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give it to the girl's father, because he publicly defamed a virgin of Israel, and she shall remain his wife. He cannot divorce her all his days. That's for the false accusation that she would have engaged in acts prior to marriage. Verse 20, but if this charge is true, that the girl was not found a virgin, then they shall bring out the girl to the doorway of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her to death, because she has committed an act of folly in Israel by playing the harlot in her father's house. Thus you shall purge the evil from among you. You know, so the consequence then was death by stoning. Now, I think that would solve a lot of problems. It would probably also solve, what's his name? Come on. Ted Turner, that wants to limit the population of the world. Just apply this law and you've got it down to the number that he wanted. But notice the girl that would do that prior to her marriage was referred to as playing the harlot in her father's house. Side note, harlot's just another name for a prostitute. So God's view of outside of marriage, prior to marriage, prostitution is what it's called. Now, may not be receiving money, receiving other things, but still it's referred to as prostitution. So, hope you enjoyed that one. Ray? No, that's not. That's the man takes the wife, goes into her, finds out she wasn't a virgin at that time, and then brings the accusation that she wasn't a virgin. Okay. And then it's when it says verse 20, if this charge is true, that the girl was not found a virgin, if she wasn't a virgin. No, you're here we go. His wife had premarital sex. Is basically what it comes down. It's he finds out, right? Are we okay now? Good. Thanks, Ken. I was gonna go. How do I explain this one? Don't really want to go there this morning, but okay. So the whole point is though, is that God takes a very serious view of this. When God set it up, He set it up: man, woman, nothing prior to marriage. At marriage, then the two become one. What God has joined together, let no man separate. You know, and so you get over to Malachi chapter 2, I believe. Malachi chapter 2 is where he says God hates divorce. And it's speaking, you know, okay, you can get that he's also speaking between he and Israel and all, but he is also speaking in that context about husbands and wives and just the whole picture. Now, I'm not going to go into it. Rain, in his opening, kind of dealt with the picture that God was working with marriage. I mean, there is something much, much greater than just a man and woman coming together. It's Christ and the church. And you can go through and you can think about the implications of each one of these things. And you can figure out why it is that God set it up that way. Why did God not desire for there to be immorality prior to marriage? Why did He set it up so that He hates divorce, and that's not in His desire for man, that what God's put together, let no man separate. Well, it all has to do with the picture that He's working on for Christ in the church. Now, let's go over then. Where did I want to go from here? Let's go back to Matthew 19 then. Because the Pharisees are going to ask Him another question. Jesus has said, God's intention, God set it up, husband, wife, no separation. That's, you know, what God's put together, let no man separate. That's how he set it up. Now, they come to him with a question. Verse 7, Matthew 19:7. They said to him, "Why then did Moses command to give her a certificate of divorce and send her away?" Okay, so now their question, legitimate question. Why did, if God intended it this way and Moses was God's spokesperson, why did God say, "Hey, why is Moses saying, give her a certificate of divorce, send her away?" Which means that they're challenging Jesus' interpretation of Genesis, by the way. That's really what they're working on, is, okay, we think that you're taking this, you're misinterpreting this. That's not really what it means. Okay? So, verse 8, Jesus' answer to them, he said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it has not been this way. Okay, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted this. Now go back to Deuteronomy chapter 24. And we're going to start from verse 1. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1. When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out from his house, and she leaves his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, and if the latter husband turns against her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her to be his wife, then her former husband who sent her away is not allowed to take her again to be his wife, since she has been defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord, and you should not bring sin into on the land which your Lord your God gives you as an inheritance. Okay, now, notice in this case, this is what they're quoting, when they said Moses permitted us, you know, Moses said to divorce her, he said to give her a certificate of divorce and send her away. But you notice as you read through that, Moses doesn't say, hey, if you're not happy with your wife or anything like that, just give her a certificate of divorce and send her away. What Moses says is, man marries a wife, takes a wife, marries her, happens she finds no favor, finds some indecency in her, whatever that may be, burned his supper, no, whatever it may be, and he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hands and sends her out of the house. Notice Moses didn't say, this is what you're supposed to do. Moses just said, this is what, if the guy does this and she goes and marries somebody else and then he does the same thing, the first guy can't have her back. That's an abomination. That's what Moses doesn't say, this is the way you ought to do it. This is the law about it. He just says, hey, if you divorce your wife, you do that, and you send her out, and she marries somebody else, and he divorces her and sends her out, then you can't go back to her. That's abominable. So he doesn't specifically, you know, they're not exactly quoting Moses and the intent of what Moses was trying to say. You know, they're taking Moses' words and going, okay, because Moses mentioned this, Moses is mentioning it as a practice and just says, if you're going to practice this, then make sure that you at least don't commit an abomination in the process. But he doesn't say, hey, if you want to divorce your wife, this is how you do it. Now, it could be someplace else in there. It does. And if you know where that is, great. But I haven't seen it. So, they're taking it, and they're taking it. Do you know where it's at?
No, I don't know where that's at, but I think the question is answered in Matthew about Matthew 19, verse 19. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the parallels of what God communicates throughout the scriptures, it's when one is joined to God, then that person is one with Him. The only reason, I guess the only good reason for a divorce is being bound.
Okay. We're gonna get to that. We're going to get to that. And I don't think that's necessarily what Deuteronomy 24 is talking about, but we will get to that. So they're trying to use Deuteronomy 24 and trying to say, hey, this is Moses said that we're supposed to do this. So how's that fit with what you just said? And Jesus puts it very plainly. He says, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted it. Doesn't mean that he gave out the law and said, this is the way you go about doing it. It says he permitted it because of your hardness of heart. You know, there were certain battles that Moses wasn't going to pick, you know, certain hills that he wasn't ready to die on, that being one of them. And so it says Moses permitted it. And in that sense, God permitted it. You know, there were times of ignorance then that God did, that he allowed. And go back to Matthew 19 then, which is what Rain's getting to. Okay, so verse 8, he said, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it has not been this way. He's still going back to from the beginning. You know, in verse 4, Matthew 19, 4, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning? You know, he's going back to God's original intent. God's original intent, husband, wife, joined together, they're one, no man separate that. That's God's original intent. Now, because of people's hardness of heart, divorce came in, and so he said Moses permitted that. But even with that, verse 9, he says, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Now, what was the penalty for adultery? Stoning. You know, that's also in Deuteronomy 22. It goes on and talks about it, which, just a side note, when they caught somebody actually in the act, they're supposed to bring the man and the woman. In the case where they're bringing the woman before Jesus in John 8, and, you know, we caught her in the very act committing adultery, the question that never comes up is, where's the man? You know, there's supposed to be a man there too. If you caught her in the very act, there's obviously somebody else that was there too. And so they both should have been there. But it was a trap for Jesus. And Jesus recognized it as such and dealt with it as such. Okay. So he says, verse 9, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality, in which case she's already committed adultery, which she should be dead, but, you know, except for immorality, and marries another woman, commits adultery, if the immorality wasn't there. He's explaining then the intent of God's laws. So even in that case, it wasn't really a divorce that was supposed to happen. It was a death that was supposed to happen. So now he's a widower and free to marry again. But that's where Jesus puts the standard at. And this is still New Testament. He says, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Now back in chapter 5, is that where I want to go next? Actually, we will get back to Matthew chapter. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 before that. You can imagine. I'll give you verse chapter 6. verse 15. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I take away the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? May it never be. Or do you not know that one who joins himself to a harlot is one body with her? For he says the two will become one flesh. Given the earlier definition of a harlot or a prostitute and that situation, that was a lot of fun dealing with the high schoolers explaining this one to them. That it's not just an Old Testament law, but it also applies New Testament-wise. God's intentions haven't changed. God's perception hasn't changed. Okay, chapter 7 then. Oh, another really fun one that we've just begun talking about is chapter 7, verse 1. Now, concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. We're having a good time. 7:1. So, okay, right. We've gone over that actually, and thus, marriage is your option there. Either don't touch a woman or get married. Pretty much the way it goes. Okay, so. Which is why in Matthew 19, after Jesus explains about the whole divorce thing, the apostles' reaction to that is, if marriage is supposed to be this way, then it's better off not to even get married. You know, these are all married guys who are saying this. You know, wonder what their wives thought of that comment. But that's their take on it, is, hey, if it's this intense, if God says that they're not supposed to. Now, what God's joined together, let no man separate. The only cause for a divorce, to divorce the wife, would be in a case of immorality. You know, and if you're divorcing her outside of immorality, then you're committing adultery. The disciples' response is, hey, it's better off not to even get married then. And Jesus said, huh, yeah, probably right. But only so many people can handle that. There's only a certain portion of people who are able to go their whole life that way. We'll get to there, too.
If it's better for us not to take a wife, which is not me, then how do you perpetuate the human race?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Paul's, that's First Corinthians 7. That's what all those little test tubes and things are for. No. First Corinthians 7. Is where he deals with that and actually says, but because of immoralities, you know, it's better to marry than to burn with passion. The fact is, very few people can actually remain pure their whole life without marriage. And so he says, because of immoralities, because of the immoral world that we live in, the society around us, then it's better off to marry. So for most people, he still says, that's the way to go. In which case, the human race gets perpetuated.
Okay, God created them, male and female. The two become one flesh. That was from the beginning. That was what God had in mind for that situation. What this is talking about here in chapter 7 is now concerning the things about which you wrote. It is good for a man not to touch a woman. You got to look at the context here. And the context goes back into the previous chapter where it's talking about harlots and all these other problems. It's not wrong for a man who is married to touch his wife. That's a good thing. For a man who is not married. Well, I'm sorry, guys, but it's what
yeah,
we're.
I thought you were going somewhere else.
No, you got to look at the context of chapter 7, verse 1.
Right. And keep in mind.
It's a statement that it's not good for a man to touch a woman, period. I don't think that's what that's talking about.
Guess what? I went to Bible college. I heard that argument in Bible college, too. I didn't buy it then either. I understand where you're coming from, Tom. I understand what you're trying to, you know, the thing that I was taught in Bible college was that this is actually they are writing that it's good for a man not to touch a woman. So he's got to deal with that. I don't think that's what you got going on there. In the whole context, you keep going. He does deal with the need for, because he talks about, but because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife. So I don't think that what you're talking about is they're asking this question, what are we supposed to do? You're not supposed to touch our wives and that kind of stuff. I don't think that's what's going on. What you've got going on is you've got immorality going on in Corinthians church. Chapter 5 in 1 Corinthians is the man that had his father's wife. So you've got major immorality going on, and he's dealing with the whole topic, the whole subject, and that fits in just in a little portion of it. Now, that's not really what I want to go over this morning. Okay, if you'd like to talk with me privately about it, love to. Because then I can tell you what we went through, what I went through with the high schoolers on it. But for right now, working on the whole idea of divorce and what Jesus had to say about divorce is not actually going to help me, especially in the 5 minutes I have left. So let me, where did I just, did I tell you guys to go anywhere? I didn't tell you where to go. I got to remember where I was at. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Oh, right. Okay, chapter 7, verse 10. But to the married I give instructions, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. The husband should not send his wife away. Is that where I wanted to be? Hold on a second. Okay, what I was looking for, that might be in. It might be Mark. Hold on a second. Mark 10. That's what I, sorry. Mark, let's go to Mark 10. That's what I actually wanted. Mark 10, you've got the same discussion going on with the Pharisees just recorded by Mark. The whole idea of certificate of divorce, sending her away, hardness of heart, all that. But God's joined together, let no man separate. Verse 10, Mark 10:10. And in the house, the disciples began questioning him again about this again. And he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. And if she herself divorces her husband and marries another man, she is committing adultery. Okay, so here he says, the one who divorces his wife, marries another, commits adultery against her. But the same thing, if she herself divorces her husband, marries another man, she's committing adultery. So whoever's, you know, and I believe it also talked about it, when you would divorce her, and I don't remember where I saw this, but pretty much, when you have divorce, whoever, if it's not for the cause of immorality, then the parties involved, he says, are committing adultery. And even the man could be forcing the wife, you know, if he divorces her and he goes and marries somebody else, and it says he's also forcing her to commit adultery and that she ends up going and marrying somebody else too. Okay. Rick. Matthew 5. Thank you. Okay, so let's go back to Matthew 5. Okay, Matthew 5:31 then. It says, and it was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. Okay, and later on, he hears that a couple times. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife except for the cause of unchastity, which you link that up with Matthew 19, then that's immorality. The unchastity there, immorality. And it is actually in the physical realm. It's not just the committing lust. Okay, makes her commit adultery. Okay, so if he divorces the wife, and it's not unchastity, he's making her commit adultery. And he says, whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Now, that's not Old Testament law. That is Jesus saying, this is my take on it. You know, that Yes, you've heard it was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. Okay, that was the law. He says, what I'm telling you is, unless there is immorality involved in it, then the parties involved are committing adultery. That's his take on divorce. Is, unless there's immorality involved, then those who are involved, those who divorce, go get married again, he says that's adultery. And 1 Corinthians 7, we started to look at that. Let's look at that to tie this up. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Verse 10. After telling the unmarried that if they can handle it, they should remain as he does, which let's get that. Verse 8. But I say to the unmarried and to widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I, which would be unmarried, which is consistent with what Jesus said, too. When the disciples said, hey, it'd be even better not to marry. And he said, well, OK, yeah, Eddie, you're right, but not many can actually accept that. OK, so Paul agrees with Jesus. That's good to know. As if there would be any disagreement there. Side note, I was in Bible college once, sitting in a class, and actually I don't know if it was this subject, it was another, oh no, it was women's role in the congregation or whatever, and the guy was going through what the scripture said in something that Paul had written, 1 Corinthians probably 14 maybe, and one of the guys said in the class, he said, I don't care what Paul has to say, what does Jesus say? That was the high quality of students that you were getting at Bible college. Okay. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. But to the married, so Tom, there's your, the verse 9 thing, that answers the, how does the human race continue? Yeah, it continues. Okay. You know, it continues due to lack of self-control. But to the married, I give instructions, not I, but the Lord. The wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, let her remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and that the husband should not send his wife away. But to the rest, I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, let him not send her away. If a woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away. Okay, and then, you know, God does, you know, looking through from there, God does allow in situations for there to be separation. He does say, hey, separate, but he tells the wife, remain unmarried. With the hope of there being repentance and some ability then for reconciliation. That's, you know, apart from divorce, apart from immorality, then everybody involved is committing adultery eventually. Now, if there is immorality involved, then you have one party who's committing adultery. So in the whole divorce thing, you have the potential for one innocent person or everybody guilty. Those are your options of adultery. Now, divorce without immorality, or he says, separate, remain unmarried, and go from there. The question now, everybody, so in that situation where we were talking about, everybody, they divorce, everybody's guilty of adultery, is adultery the unforgivable sin? No. Can it be forgiven? No. I mean, yes, sorry. Wow. Sorry. Can it be forgiven? Yes, sorry. But if it's a premeditated, let me divorce, I'll commit adultery, I'll repent later, then that's called hardness of heart. And that's called walking on very dangerous ground. Now, the best thing is to stick with God's original plan. And you stick with God's original plan, and it eliminates a lot of the questions. One of the things you got to realize, sin causes problems. It always has, always will. And it complicates life. So, even in this regard, sin complicates life. Yeah, sin does result from all this. Complicates life. And so, stick with God's way. And if you stick with God's way, that's where you don't have to answer all those difficult questions about, you know, okay, so if I marry this person, if I don't marry this person, what's that going to be? You don't have to deal with that if you follow God's way. His original plan.